From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 860, Being a Sysadmin in 2023. Recorded Thursday, December 22nd, 2022. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit SoundThoughtsLLC.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Well, it's the end of the year, and time for another recap future look show. I'm calling this one Being a Sysadmin in 2023. Been this a few years now, you probably know the drill. And thanks so much for being a part of it. I'm going to read a comment from last year's show. So this is a comment from show 808, the one we did at the end of the year, talking about IT in 2022. And this comes from Justin Morgan, who said, I've been listening for a few years. Just dropped by to say thanks for the work you do. 2022 is already off to an amazing start for me. I got a promotion, which is nice. But more importantly, a coworker finally used Git to commit something to one of my scripts. I guess that means we should be throwing a party soon. And at the time, I immediately responded and said, yep, you're right. You should definitely throw a party. But hey, Justin, just to make it even more fun, let me send you a Run As Radio mug. If you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on Facebook or LinkedIn, where we publish every show. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, we'll send you a mug. I typically go through lists in this show of the latest technologies, things we see coming up and so forth. But there seems to be an overwhelming theme emerging coming into 2023, and that's about economic impacts. The word recession is being thrown around pretty casually, and that's actually an economic definition, and it's almost meaningless, really, in that sense. We may have a recession, we may not. It doesn't matter. The bigger thing I see here is that companies are nervous. They're being very careful with their money. And I'm not predicting the future here. I'm already talking to folks in different organizations who almost didn't seem to get a budget this year. Sure, they were going to maintain their regular expenditures, but for anything above and beyond, they essentially had to go request by request up the chain of finance to get any money at all. And that effectively reduced budgets because, you know, not everyone's willing to go in and get additional money, and it's hard work to do so. And it also means you have to make that ROI case, which I think is just not as well known today as it used to be. For better or worse, I entered the workforce in the 80s during a recession, and I got an education pretty quickly on the idea that you had to justify every expenditure. But it seems like since the dot-com bust back in 2000-2001, we really haven't had that much of a downturn. You know, 2008-2009 notwithstanding, for the most part, it's been fat budgets and steady growth and lots of opportunities and just a lack of enough IT folk to keep up with the sheer amount of work that we've got to do. You know, nobody's to-do list is getting completed, and we've been as busy as can be. I mean, most companies are still somewhat frugal, but I think we're about to hit a separate wave. So you may be in the same situation as many other folks where you've probably never functioned in a significant downturn, or certainly may not be in a leadership position while you're functioning in a significant downturn. And this is not necessarily a bad thing. It's not an easy thing. Capitalism kind of needs a period of retrenchment every so often. And so these economic periods where money is spent more carefully and expenses closely scrutinized are kind of a way to cut away the cruft. The problem is that the nature of our work is that it's often invisible. And so it's very easy for you to be perceived as a cost center. And those are the kinds of things that get cut when things get tricky or tough. And it's not true. Ultimately, sysadmins and the folks that keep infrastructure running and so forth can be sources of cost savings as well, or even sources of revenue. It's really about how we focus our work, how we present yourself. And is there anything I can do over the next half hour or so? It's to focus on those kinds of things. So let's still dig into the essential aspects of anything to do with ROI, because we're force amplifiers. We make everybody else more productive. You got to imagine folks trying to do their work just in pen and paper without all those PCs and productivity software, or the ERP systems that help us with their planning, or the custom software that allows an awful lot of that work to take place and to gather income and from multiple sources, and then all of the analytical tools on the back end that allow us to see how we're doing and what we're doing and how we could do more and emphasize the good and de-emphasize the bad. So at the simplest level, it's easy for us to be cost savings folks. We can dig into how money's being spent in the organization, providing better tooling around what's profitable and what's not profitable. And it's a good practice. You know, there's a reason that information technology for most organizations is tied to the finance side of companies. CFOs often have this responsibility because it also represents most of the tools for measuring the productivity and costs and profitability of a company. And if you haven't involved yourself in that much in the past few years, it's probably the right time to get more involved to help understand how a company makes money and where it spends its money. And then to improve that, the best way to save money is to know where it's going so that you know how to optimize it. So if you haven't had a meeting lately with a director of finance or the CFO or whoever responsible the purse strings, it's probably time to do that and to offer that assistance to find ways to be able to measure expenses more closely. In that same token, if you're looking at a budget that you're and considering what you're going to spend in the next year, now is an excellent time for you to look at expenditures that could be deferred. If we've got equipment that's about to be replaced, could we get an extended warranty on it and carry it another year or two, just until the uncertainty lets off? I'm talking to organizations over the past few months that are already deep into this kind of behavior, that they really have had seriously restricted budgets and every expense is being questioned. And so you can get on top of that. You can get ahead of what those concerns look like and where they want to focus and really be perceived as part of the solution to reducing expense. Revenue sources, let's get into that a little later on. Over this year, I have talked to a lot of different folks, and if you've listened to the show, you know who they are. And I asked them there about their thoughts for 2023. And so I'm going to mention a few of them along the way here. One of the ones I talked to was Sonia Cuff. And when I asked her what her thoughts were 2023, she said, "Hey, I expect we are to optimize spending a lot. I mean, when was the last time you saw an IT budget doubled?" Which is pretty rare because it does happen when you see mergers and sudden growth and so forth. But I don't see that happening very much this next year. And she did quote our friend Satya Nadella, who said, "We're all going to be doing more with less," which seems to be what's been going on at Microsoft. They've been pretty careful with their money as well. But that, again, speaks to, are we using the equipment we have well already? Is there an opportunity to do more with it and to not have to spend very much to go further? And that whole mindset of measuring precisely helps a great deal on that. I'd be remiss if I didn't dig into the current set of security issues, but I am going to do it in the context of what they look like in an economic downturn. It's not going away. Obviously, the black hats are still doing their thing. And these days, the top of the line ransomware is a tool called Lockbit 3.0, and you can pick it up on the dark web if you want to. But it's interesting to see that its feature set focused not just on encrypting data to ransom it, but also on exfiltration. Exfiltration seems to be the standard today, the new normal, that not only are the black hats going to try and encrypt your data to extort from you money, but they're also going to steal it. And you're never really going to know what happened to the data that they stole. In many cases, and I think back to the show we did with Sammy Leho on the Vastimo exploit, and now seeing again in Australian healthcare where they've had a major exfiltration of data, the bad guys are going to extort individual patients and individuals whose data it's related to, not just the organization that was supposed to protect it. So it's we're getting a grimmer and grimmer version of what these exploits look like. And this past year, we saw the country of Costa Rica declare a national emergency over their ransomware attack, where the black hats went after the Ministry of Finance and Healthcare, which largely were crippled for months. And I think to the show I did a while back with Dana Epp talking about recovering from a ransomware attack, and just this recognition that Paying the ransom doesn't end the attack all that quickly, any more than not paying the ransom would. You're going to be crippled for a long time, so it's best to resist them in the first place. On the good news side of the ransomware story, that particular tool we were talking about, LockBit, which represented the massive number of the current generation of ransomware attacks, has gotten large enough that the big security players and the big policing players have gone after them. And recently, just back in October of 2022, there was an arrest of a dual citizen that was involved with LockBit. So we may be seeing, once again, as we've seen with other very organized ransomware services, when you get too big, the law enforcement comes and you end up in jail. Related to the cybersecurity aspect of our problem space, software supply chain, Log4j, which really started in 2021, but we dealt with all through 2022, brought to light to us how important understanding what software our applications depend on, that these key libraries get exploited. We need to know where they're exploited. And back in the day of the Log4j exploit, we talked about, do you know what apps use Log4j? And this idea of a software bill of materials. I was very pleased to see that OWASP now has a free software bill of materials tool called Cyclone DX. And so whether you've bought product or maybe you've bought product, maybe you're still trying to decide what to do, obviously take a look at a product that the OWASP folks are providing to us to help us understand what software we're dependent on and so that we can respond more quickly when these different kinds of vulnerabilities appear. Not that we're still seeing in this classic array of attacks. Vulnerabilities to software, a big one. Vulnerabilities in infrastructure, you know, byproduct of the pandemic has very much been that we blew apart our perimeters and we're still struggling to understand zero trust and implement it throughout all our systems. Some software is going to need to change. Certainly some procedures need to change. But our system seems to be more vulnerable than ever before. And so keeping things patched, staying up to date is all a key part of it. My conversation with Sammy Leo, he brought up that he saw that 2021 was really the first year that unpatched vulnerabilities was a more successful strategy for the Black Hat than even phishing was as an initial entry point for ransomware. So the press to keep patched on all internet-facing systems and to be up to date on what vulnerabilities you have, what software bill of materials tells you the libraries you need to protect, or get services for it, because it's how you're going to get attacked. Not that phishing's going away. It's still extraordinarily common. And the same with insider attacks, that we're seeing ransomware folks going after disgruntled employees and taking advantage of it. So the lateral move securities that we've talked about over and over again continue to be a key tool for us to deal with one way or the other. And it's not a bad thing to just keep it top of mind that it's easy to downplay technology-related attacks, to think of them as victimless and so forth. None of that's true. It's real crime. It is extortion. You know, ransomware is almost too friendly. Calling it extortion sets the tone a little better. And then if you're involved in it, you risk going to jail. I updated all the information I had on cybersecurity, talked to a few different firms, and found cyber insurance is getting more expensive. The prices continue to go up with the increasing number of claims. The insurance services are getting more and more serious about their expectations. Seeing more often that cyber insurance ultimately doesn't get paid out because the insured was not properly compliant with the agreement they made with the insurer. One of the classic ones I've seen is that the organization was not, quote, fully using multi-factor authentication, and they were using that as an excuse not to pay out. So really, it's not enough to have deployed MFA, but to actually have it everywhere. And to the point where some cyber insurance companies are now requiring audits that they actually want to go through and run security scorecard or BitSight on your infrastructure and organization to evaluate that before they'll even consider offering a policy. It should also be a way to drive down the cost of policy as well. And here's where we get back to that economic incentive where organizations want this insurance policy. They're shocked at how much it is, and it's well worth pressing against the idea of we can spend some money to raise our security posture, which will not only protect the company better, but reduce the cost of the insurance policies that are important. So there are better tools. There are better levels of security. You're going to see cyber insurance folks starting to go beyond MFA and even into understanding the policies around privileged access management, aka who's got a super user account and when do they use it? And that's talking to us. We're still a key vector for systems being attacked because our accounts have so much power. And so getting to that practice of living in a domain account and only escalating for operations, really getting to that PAM mindset, that privileged access management, that elevating your privileges is only a periodic thing. That's not only going to protect you better, it's also going to reduce your cyber insurance costs when you pursue this in more detail. And let's take a brief moment for this most important message. Your users are working remotely, and the bad guys know it. New phishing attacks are already landing in the inboxes of your users. Are those computers as protected as they would be if they were on premises? If their machine catches ransomware, is restoring from backup really the answer? Don't be the IT admin that could have done something to prevent the problem, but didn't. Block the badness and prevent business continuity problems at the source by using Policy Pack on your hybrid Windows machines. With Netrix Policy Pack, you get the power to manage applications and browsers on Windows 10 and 11, overcome application UAC prompts, block unknownware, dynamically configure the Windows start screen, taskbar, and file associations. As a bonus, you can use Netrix Policy Pack to deliver any on-premises group policy and group policy preference settings to your remote work machines for the security and configuration they need. Learn how thousands of other administrators enhance their remote work scenarios. Come to policypack.com to start a free trial. That's policypack.com. Netrix Policy Pack. Powerful data security made easy. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell, flying solo for my Being a Sysadmin in 2023 show. Digging a little into digital transformation, I think tools have gotten substantially better. When I'm talking to Sammy Leho, he mentioned the idea that we're still struggling to learn using the cloud. Microsoft's gotten far better and more realistic at recognizing that hybrid is normal, that you're always going to have infrastructure on your premises or owned and controlled by your organization, as well as use it in the cloud. It's nice to retire some of that stuff, and certainly it's another strategy of reducing cost. And you know, you've got to do the math on that to say, is the Azure or your cloud versions of these products actually less expensive than your on-prem gear? It's certainly an argument if you have on-prem gear that's still reliable and is fully amortized, like it's been paid for, that you should continue to use that before you shift to cloud expenditures, but also that lift and shift is the most expensive way to use cloud, that getting into reorganizing software, reducing the number of virtual machines, moving more to the platform places is a way to reduce cost as well. That hybridization of Active Directory is always going to be a challenging part. And Sammy emphasized to me when we were talking this idea that infrastructure folks really need to focus on securing your Active Directory. It is a tool that the Black Hats are going to use to be able to navigate within your system. And so while Azure Active Directory is naturally pretty secure, Microsoft works pretty hard on doing that, your own has to work easily as hard, and that's up to you. So you're going to have to put energy into all of that. Other ways to reduce costs that I think are particularly relevant now is we're seeing a lot of older applications and infrastructure, while they may have been paid for, they cost a lot to operate, and they represent a tax surface, and they represent a lot of time involved. And so a press to be able to modernize and retire some of those applications, certainly some of them moving to the SaaS model, where you can find an equivalent replacement and simply pay by the user rather than operate that infrastructure. It's good for you to have those numbers together to understand those things. And this is all a part and parcel of that cost-saving aspect. But even, you know, cost savings go further than that. When better quality software can operate in more locations and in more ways for users, they get their work done faster, and that improves their overall productivity. So they're able to make more money for the company at a lower cost. They're doing more with less, and you can be part of that. Certainly, the Power App Stack represents a tooling approach to being able to get folks to create more automation so that they can do more with less everywhere. So it's a powerful set of tools. If you haven't spent any time with it yet, it's a great time to dig further into it and to understand how retiring some of that old infrastructure that can be running on costly equipment and unreliable equipment that's incurring a lot of expense can be alleviated by switching it over to more modern stuff that's running strictly into the cloud. So good to do all the math on all of that, work your way through it. Power Apps, obviously, if you're already in the Azure space, is an easy one. The licensing is pretty straightforward, and it's, you know, it takes time to get involved in it, but pretty quickly you get into a state where it doesn't cost any more to add more of those apps and get more done with it. It is interesting to think in terms of maybe doing some internal IT-related apps with this first. In the end, it's really not a you don't really need a developer for this. It's about domain experts, and you are certainly an expert in your domain of the kind of work that people need from you. So depending on how you do your tickets or other self-serve services and so forth, you might look at Power Apps for doing this. And then that helps build up that model enough that you can see how to secure it effectively, how to interact with it well, and get some sense of the cost of it so that you can feed that back into the organization to continue to be more efficient. Most of our primary products, the things we're working with, things like Windows and Server and so forth, I mean, not a lot happened in the past year, and we don't expect a whole lot to happen in the next year. I still don't see Windows 11 being wildly embraced by the enterprise as the new desktop OS. It's got its problems. They seem to be tweaking that. They're increasing support durations on it. They're certainly adding some new features in terms of dealing with enterprise modes. But most folks I talk to are still sticking with Windows 10. It's not going anywhere. We've been told point blank it's going to be in enterprise support for till at least 2025. I wouldn't be the least bit if that was extended. They're talking about extending Windows 7 support again, and it's supposed to expire now, essentially in January 2023. So Microsoft tends to move the goalposts when the customer says so. And I think 10 is going to stick around for quite a while. So, but those numbers are always useful for us to push back to our finance folks to say it's worth doing this expenditure because we expect to go out of support in a couple of years and we need to have a plan. I just wish 11 was more ready for that. Server 2022 still doesn't see, I'm not seeing massive adoption of it. Folks are pretty happy with 2019 and 2016 for that matter. They're good working versions. It's a question of what infrastructure you need. Most of the time, rather than modernize the server, we're loading that into Azure and offloading it. So you can see that happening more and more with you. But there's nothing wrong with 2022. It seems to be doing a good job as well, taking us to the next level. I wanted to talk a little bit about how we can actually, as sysadmins at times, be part of the income of a company. And that's usually on the data analytics side more than anything else. It used to be the data analytics projects were massive, expensive things where you needed a lot of consultants and a lot of experimentation. It isn't that way anymore. The cloud has simplified this massively, and the tooling has gotten dramatically better. And because it's in the cloud, you don't need a large upfront cost. You can do experiments for a few days and then wind everything down again and analyze your results for a few dollars. So if you don't have a major analytics practice in your organization already, but you are gathering all this data, you're probably missing some revenue opportunities. That might just be optimization of sales. So what areas sell better than others? What products are more profitable than others? Just so you can tune and tweak. In conservative times, in recessionary times, when people are careful with their money, they're more likely to stick with brands they know. And hopefully your organization is one of those. What it means is that this is an excellent time for your company to do more selling to its existing customer base. And that means expanding the product range, but also knowing what the customer already has and what the customer could possibly want. This is a data analytics problem. And with contemporary tooling, you can do a good job of really looking at what customers are buying, what they aren't buying, what are the products we'd extend to, and essentially give a data-driven approach to new revenue streams, to being able to provide more service to your existing customers. You know, that's a good day when you can find those things just from analyzing data. So I can't recommend enough spending time with tools like Power BI and the entire data analytics suite that exists inside of Azure these days. If you're already committed into that stack and to some degree, there's more to be done in there. You likely already own licenses to this product. What is needed is some time spent with them to try and find some of the data opportunities that exist for the organization and allow it to grow. I've been generally suggesting to folks that they back away from experimental projects, from things that are too out there. And a lot of the projects that fall under the artificial intelligence banner are pretty out there. And more conservative projects tend to get funded when you can see the direct ROI. But there are certainly elements of machine learning that apply extremely well to the data analytics side to help you understand costs and expenditures. And all of those aspects are powerful for being able to extract more value from data. And they're pretty cost effective. You're not talking about building huge machine learning models. You're mostly focused on using existing models that are provided by the service providers, and not just Microsoft. You look at organizations like Snowflake and the like. They all make tools to help you analyze data more effectively using machine learning models. And I like that term better than AI anyway, because it does speak to a very sensible aspect of data analytics, which is that we have had the ability to mine data algorithmically for a long time. It's just gotten more advanced and easy to use by the minute. So you can use those tools at a relatively low cost to perhaps extract some value and then share it within the organization to see, is this a good model? Does this show the value we think it does? Perhaps pursue that. These are the ideal times for us as sysadmins to show our value, to not just be seen as a cost center, but to be seen as a place to save some money for the organization, to make the organization more efficient, and to even reveal potential revenue streams. All of them are powerful opportunities for us, and they really shape the fact that we are these force amplifiers, that we make everyone more productive, and we can even make the organization's data more productive. We just have to have time to focus on those things. I hope you're able to get out of the pounding surf of the day-to-day crises. It's easy to get enamored of that, just be in the battle every day where you feel productive and essential because you're just fighting fires all the time. A lot of the things that I'm talking about here in terms of cost efficiency and finding new revenue streams are much more preparatory or preventative strategies. And so, yeah, your day-to-day crises are always going to win, but I hope you're using automation tools and learning from them so that you're not having this to fight the same fire every day. That you can eventually get on top of those and have a little more discretionary time to start pursuing some of these other ideas to see if there's new ways to be more efficient, to optimize the expend you currently have by implementing it more effectively. A lot of the defaults we used when we lifted and moved things quickly in the pandemic into the cloud and into other alternative infrastructures, they weren't optimized for cost. They were optimized for rapid deployment. And now is a great time for us to go through those and say, does this still need to be here? Is it done the right way? Is there a way to optimize that and tune it? You're going to need some discretionary time to do that. But that discretionary time rapidly becomes more valuable than a lot of those crises that are occurring. So if you can knock those crises down, get them under control, and get the system a little more stable, perhaps you'll have more time to do more optimization. We're not going to run out of work. There's a ton to do. There's always a ton to do. And that can seem daunting at times, but this is where automation comes to play. So if you're feeling a little overwhelmed, carve off a little time to automate some of those individual steps and things that could happen automatically and not need constant intervention, because the list will only get longer. Situation can only get worse. One last thing, and it's about learning. If you're in the situation that I've seen a lot of folks in right now where you have to advocate for every budget item, advocating for attending a conference or going to a workshop or getting additional training is tough. The trick is to speak in the language of the finance folks, which is to show that return on investment. Look at the conference you want to go to. Look at the workshops you're interested in and look at how it's going to provide value to the company. Either as a cost saving, as a potential revenue source. Those things speak volumes of the return on investment. It's going to cost a few thousand dollars for you to do any of those things. Is that money going to be made back from the company when you get back with a new set of skills that you can apply? It's good to keep track of the fact that you spent that money and then also created these returns. So the organization can see, those finance folks can understand, you spend money wisely with the organization. The money still exists. It's not like it evaporated. We're just being careful with it. And so if you can show your care with it, you're going to have access to it and create more opportunities for yourself. I hope you have a great 2023, and I hope you're enjoying your holiday, and I'll see you in the new year. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio.